Today I'm going to be talking about the interactions that occur between Argentine ants at the boundaries between contiguous super colonies. I'm sure most of you are familiar with Argentine ants, but I'll give a little bit of background to start with. Ants make really good biological invaders, and they exhibit a range of impacts, or create impacts such as ranging from the social to the economic, often in agriculture, and they also cause direct and indirect ecological impacts. An Argentine ant, or Linnopothema humulae, stands out as being among the worst, one of the most widespread, and also one of the most well-studied of all invasive ant species. But it shares a suite of attributes with other invasive ants that make them all particularly good invaders, such as their association with humans, disturbed habitats, and also their generalist nesting and feeding requirements. But perhaps their most important shared trait is their sociality. It's their sociality that allows them to cope in new environments and form expansive colonies. And Argentine ants have spread from their native Argentina and surrounds, shown in the green, and spread to Mediterranean and subtropical environments across six continents and numerous oceanic islands, shown in the red. And in their native range, Argentine ants usually have multiple nests with small territories that they aggressively defend, but in their introduced range, they shift from this multicolonial structure and exhibit extreme unicoloniality, and it's thought that this is brought about due to a decrease in genetic diversity in their introduced range. And this unicoloniality, which is defined by the absence of behavioural boundaries, is what allows them to form supercolonies, which provides really high densities and gives them the competitive advantage to displace most native ant species in their introduced range, which is their major ecological impact. And major supercolonies are known to exist in California and Europe, and smaller ones have been identified in North Carolina, Melbourne, Australia, and New Zealand. So focusing on the US for a bit, a lot of the attention on Argentine ants in the US has been in California due to the large and expansive colonies that are evident there. And although a group in California had already identified that there were at least five different supercolonies, and Thomas et al. In 2005, working out of the Holloway lab at the time, identified that there's actually one really large colony and at least three smaller supercolonies that were contiguous with this large colony in that they shared boundaries. And the interactions between the ants from the different supercolonies at these boundaries were characterised by constant fighting and high mortality. And when they took these ants from the different supercolonies and put them together in the lab, as shown by the black bars in their experimental treatment, where ants were allowed to interact and had sustained contact, they found that aggression actually increased over time. We have a similar situation in North Carolina, although on a much smaller scale, where we have two contiguous supercolonies, and again the interactions of these boundaries are characterised by constant fighting, and as you can see here, accumulations of dead ants that occur at the contact zones between these supercolony boundaries. So we thought that this is a really good opportunity to try and reconcile what's happening at supercolony boundaries and how they're maintained, because what's happening in California really seems to be an anomaly, where you've got two colonies that are constantly fighting with no clear benefit to one or the other and no permanent acquisition of territory. And it contradicts what happens in a lot of ant community mosaics, where you often have suppressed aggression between neighbouring colonies to save on resources that they would otherwise dedicate to territorial aggression. It means it also is in opposition to the dear enemy phenomenon. So we thought if we explored the North Carolina situation in the same way, it may shed some light as to what's happening at these boundaries. So we have super colonies in RTP, which is an industrial park near Raleigh in North Carolina's Piedmont, and we identified the boundary between two arbitrarily named super colonies, RTP3 and RTP2. And across this boundary we constructed four transects, and the continuum of these transects was broken up by car parks and roads, but the patterns of aggression remained constant across them between the two super colonies. And we collected ants directly either side of the boundary and also at 100 metres either side of the boundary. And we also collected ants from another colony in Winston-Salem, North Carolina, to allow a comparison, a geographically separate comparison between the RTP colonies and that colony. So the lab colonies were created from our transect collections, and colony combinations were paired such that we had the RTP colonies paired for 0 metres and again at 100 metres from the boundary. And we also compared the RTP colonies separately with the Winston-Salem colonies so that we could compare regression between adjacent supercolonies at RTP and geographically separate colonies. We measured aggression between these colony pairs using... For each colony combination, there were treatment pairs where these experimental colonies were connected via tubing and the ants were allowed to interact in the central arena. There are also control pairs where these experimental colonies were isolated and ants weren't allowed to interact throughout the experiment. We measured aggression using 5-on-5 assays where we took 5 workers from each colony, put them together in a petri dish and allowed them to fight it out. And we counted the number of fighting workers every minute for 10 minutes. We measured aggression before these colonies were connected, so at 0 days, and then again at 2 and 7 days after connection. And to ensure that no change in aggression over time was due to the colonies fusing or one colony having been taken over by another, we marked the queens in the one colony of each pair by painting the trunk, as you can see here. And we also tested aggression between the experimental colonies and their opposing source after 2 and 7 days. So this is what we found. First, looking at the control pairs where ants remained in isolation and were not allowed to have contact throughout the experiment, was that aggression remained consistently high over time. In the treatment pairs where ants were connected via the tubing and allowed to interact, we found that irrespective of what combination of colonies were paired, aggression decreased over time, and in fact there was a significant decrease in aggression even after 2 days. And these experimental colonies remained intact, there was no movement of queens, and there was a consistently high aggression between experimental colonies and their opposing sources. So I think what stands out is that our results differ to what was initially found in California, again showing that the black bars show that in California, when they had ants with sustained contact in the laboratory, aggression increased, and we found an overall decrease in aggression with sustained contact in the laboratory. Another thing that differed from the Californian example was that they found a decrease in aggression away from the boundary, whereas we didn't. So we don't really know why our results differed so markedly from California, except to say that it may be due to the inherently different conditions, such as their much larger supercolonies that whose growth isn't limited by the cold winter temperatures as ours are in North Carolina. And also in the distance comparison, the Californians compared ants from 500 metres away from the boundary, whereas we compared them from 100 metres away simply due to our smaller scale that we were dealing with. So in addition to our results differing from the Californian example, our lab results also seem to differ from the field situation. And we think that colony density may be in some way affecting the level of territorial aggression that's displayed. So in the lab where we had small discrete colonies with a finite number, each colony had 1,000 workers, it would seem that the cost of territorial defence in that situation would be fairly high. In addition, these workers were interacting, the experimental colonies, the same workers were interacting with the same workers throughout the experiment. So we had a situation with sustained contact possibly leading to habituation and the reduced aggression that we saw. In the field, it's a much different situation where we have really large supercolonies supporting high densities, and in that case the cost of defence is probably likely to be less. There's no real fitness benefit for either colony to reduce aggression against the other. What's also true in the field is that there's the potential for ants to be recruited from any other part of the supercolony towards the battlefront, as it were, at the boundary, in part probably just to replace a lot of the mortality that's happening there. So these workers being recruited to the front are likely to be naive and have had less experience with the opposing colony. So you've got new workers coming in, no sustained contact, so therefore no room for habituation and a situation of ongoing aggression. So irrespective of what the mechanism is that's causing the difference between our lab and field results, It seems that something like the dear enemy phenomenon may be occurring in the lab, and it's definitely not apparent in the field. And what we hope to do in the future, as a lot of these results are preliminary at this stage, is perhaps better simulate the field situation in the laboratory by adding additional nests to our already boundary nests that are contacted, and see if the availability of extra workers that can be recruited to the front increases the time that it takes for aggression to decrease throughout the experiment. And with that, I show you some more dead ants, and I thank these people. Questions?
You know, the body size of ants in different size colonies, because, like, in the big super colonies, do they have a larger ant versus a smaller one?
Well, I haven't measured it, but I suspect that they're no different. They don't look any different, you know, just through general observation. So. Yep.
You mentioned the habituation during horsing.
Yep.
So, habituation for what?
Habituation,
yeah,
meaning just that they become accustomed to one another. We're not really sure of the mechanism whether there's the initial mortality that we get when the nests are connected, whether that mortality is representative of the more diverse recognition cues being removed straight away, or what, we don't really know at this point. So. David?
So do you see the same pattern in the field you mentioned this briefly in the talk?
Yep. The same pattern of...
Yeah, so our ants are territory boundary more aggressive to one another than ants. Same two super colonies are collected well away from the boundaries of alpha 1 and alpha 1.
No, oh, you mean the ones that were taken from a spatially discrete colony?
Yeah.
There was no difference in aggression. Well, actually, there was one of the RTP colonies did show less aggression with that colony. And we don't have the data yet. We're almost there, but we suspect that there's less genetic differentiation between that one RTP colony and the Winston-Salem one. So the RTP2, I think it is, has really high aggression with Winston-Salem, but it's less with RTP3.